This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 34.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello and welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese picture Goodfellas one exclusively accessed minute at a time. I'm Ron Richards and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And somehow we have convinced Jeff Cannata to join us again for another day.
Well, I'm mid Steadicam. I can't get out of the same shot. I can't bail in the same shot.
Exactly. You got to stick with us.
In between the shows, I was looking up the McConkie oeuvre, and he is the Steadicam to the stars. Is what he is?
He
really is.
We'll talk about it as we get to the end of this, so we can give him his due.
Yeah, but so this minute starts with Karen and Henry emerging from the kitchen to the lobby of the Copacabana, and it ends with Henry letting out a relaxed sigh. So we have traversed the kitchen, and now we go through a door, and we see people waiting in line in the Copacabana, and Henry and Karen just walk right by them.
The maitre d' drops those other bastards like they don't even exist.
Yeah.
It's very nice of them to just stay pressed up against that wall, though. Mm-hmm. Very polite.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of the maitre d' is Anthony Polamini. Sorry.
That's interesting.
And he actually was the maitre d' at the Copa in the 60s, and Scorsese found him, and he's basically playing himself.
I like it. At this point, we're really seeing Marty, like whenever they need somebody. Can we just get the actual guy?
Yeah.
Is he hanging around? Let's just do that.
It's the authenticness of it.
Yeah. Also, it's easier.
Yeah, exactly. He knows the lay of the land and knows what he's doing. But yeah,
wait, we got a bunch of felons. Can we get some felons to play those felons?
This is actually the second actor who is performing in the restaurant that he actually worked in as his younger self. So that's a thing that happens.
That is the thing. and it's funny because the maitre d' then beckons for another person named Anthony. And my note here was, is it effective to use the name Anthony just as a first name in this area?
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking...
Yeah, someone's bound to respond. Just say Anthony and someone's bound to get you what you need.
At least 8 people would be like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anthony.
So do we see... do you notice behind the maitre d' the cigarette girl?
Yeah.
You don't see those anymore. Yeah. Within the little French maid costume with the hair off. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So the maitre d' greets Henry and Karen and then immediately calls over Anthony to help seat them. And the Steadicam shot continues as we follow the waiter. We now move from Karen and Henry. The subject now is the waiter and the table, which is being glided through the club and placed literally right in the middle of the front.
Well, again, bringing up that question, how come he's getting this treatment?
Yeah.
Is he the other thing? So this is a whole lot of questions that came up for me.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot of questions to get it, so dive in. Yeah.
Did they know he was coming? Because if not...
My guess is no, because the maitre d' sounds surprised.
Then how did they get the table so fast and have the spot for it?
Well, and let's leave a table hole in case anybody shows up.
It's a big hole.
We need to put a table in for them.
Further, where does the little lamp plug in?
I also have that question.
Yes.
I love that little plastic lamp. How is it plugged in? How does it not
tilt? It's battery powered, guys.
No, there's a wire running through it. Is it running through the whole club? I don't know. It's just very strange.
Do they have little plugs on the floor? I don't know, because they're dead center. They're not near a wall outlet. I don't know. That seems like a fire hazard to me. That's probably why the place keeps closing down. Right. We had alluded to this, but I look at this at this point and all of those extras, and I don't know that there is that many extras. I don't know if they kept it tight so that it felt like there was a lot, but it feels like there are hundreds of people and hundreds of moving pieces. Yeah. And I just thought this is such a accomplishment. And I think of how many little things could have gone wrong. And like you said, they sorted this out pretty quickly. But you know, thinking about making it work and sort of running it, and at that point, running film, having all that crew, think about how much money they were spending, you know, every second that they're getting on this, and it gives me agita. That's what I'm getting at. It stresses me out.
Well, Jeff, you are an experienced actor. Mm-hmm. I imagine have you been in any large crowd scenes like this?
Yeah, I mean nothing like this.
Well, no, yes, but I mean, but like a kind of a scenario where you're kind of, you know, like what is the mindset of the actor in this kind of, if you were in this scene, if you're at one of these tables behind Henry and Karen, what would you be doing?
Well, you try not to screw it up, right? There's the thing that I always think about is the people that are off camera now. Like they the people in the kitchen had to walk. There's a dude. There's the second AD is like wrangling all of the extras and trying to tell people, give them their paths to walk. And there's a guy who had to walk past Leota, you know, in one particular place. Yep. And then he's done. And now he's just standing there in the kitchen waiting for them to say, go back to Juan. Mm-hmm. You know, so everybody has their little paths.
This is rare, though, because this is one of those things where going back to Juan is like a half a mile away.
Right. Yeah. And it's so precise, the timing of like, in order to get people to cross in front of the camera at the right moment and pass in front of, you know, Ray Liotta and not have to interrupt them, like there's people off camera going, okay, you go, now you go, now you go. That it really is like a dance. It's like something your grandfather would do.
When you talk about the fact that they blocked nice. This in a half a day, that's what makes it even more important. That blew my mind.
Yeah.
Because this looks like the kind of thing that you should be planning this for weeks.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there was tons of pre-production.
Sure.
I'm sure it was they visited the location without, you know, without any actors, without anybody, and they planned it all out meticulously. And then when they got down there on the day, it made things go much quicker.
Yeah, but even if they had to block it just to when the people were there and just be like, you do this, you know.
Yeah.
Well, to go back to that, to refer to our good friend Larry McConkey, in an interview with Filmmaker Magazine about this shot, he pulls the curtain back. And he explains that they did the first walkthrough in the late afternoon, and basically he says, you know, they what they did was they said, okay, we're gonna walk, we're gonna follow them. We walked across the street, we went down the stairs, we went around the corner, down a long hallway, and he says, now Marty might have thought we were gonna have a voiceover over the shot, but I was kind of looking at my watch and thinking, this is already the worst case of shoe leather in the history of cinema. There's no way this will ever work.
Oh, that's great.
That is
like
such
he was
a
like,
cool
oh, it's going to get cut up.
Yep. And then he said, so then he says, finally, we get into the club and there's some dialogue and some action, but I'm thinking the first 2 minutes of the shot are going to be awful. There's no way they'll ever use it. They're going to cut it to hell. Marty looked at me for my reaction to the rehearsal and I said, yeah, sure. And he said, okay, I'll be back in a couple hours.
Now, Jeff, I know that you have seen this, but Ron, like, you ever met a crew guy?
What do you mean?
A guy on a film crew or a TV crew.
Oh, yeah, the union guy.
But they're guys who, like, they're super competent. They're very skilled. But they could not give less of a shit.
Right. Yeah.
And that is so perfect to me. Because, like, and it's the same thing if you read about, like, Star Wars. Like, all the crew guys there, all the, you know, they were British crew guys. But they were like, this is terrible.
Right.
Like, this show's going to be terrible. And it's the same thing. Like, there's a reason they're crew guys and not director. McConkey, he can operate one hell of a Steadicam.
Right.
You know, but he just didn't have the vision or whatever. Maybe no one did, but that's very typical of my experience with those guys, which is really funny. If you look through it, like,
right.
McConkey did a lot of documentary and music stuff as well as movies.
Yeah.
So he did Rattle and Hum. He did the Imagine John Lennon show, that movie. He did Casualties of War, Ghostbusters 2.
My cousin Vinny.
Jacob's Ladder, Goodfellas, Miller's Crossing right after, Mo' Better Blues with Spike Lee. The Freshman. He did a lot of gangster based stuff in 1990. He did The Freshman with Brando. It literally goes on and on, and he had Silence of the Lambs.
Wow.
He did Hoffa.
Wow. Well, going back to the scene, so Marty left after they blocked it, and while he was gone, he worked with the first director to tweak it a little bit, and specifically within the club. And he said when they came back and they showed the tweak to Marty, Scorsese said, you know, no. He says, you don't understand. The table, you know, that we see whisk through the thing. He said, the table should fly at the camera and fill the frame. He said, when I was a kid, I came to a club like this. And it was incredible to me. The thing I most remember was the way a table would appear out of nowhere.
Huh.
So there's your inspiration for the whole thing. You know?
He captured that because I felt it.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess that does support your point that I think you made last week, that it's kind of dreamlike. It's almost this little kid's remembrance of seeing some fancy person walk into a club. It's like everything parted. It's like, you know, parting of the Red Sea. Everything falls into place, and then the magical table arrives, and the magical light lights up, and it doesn't need to be plugged in any more specific. It's all just magic.
Yeah, and Connor's made this observation in previous episodes, where how much of this is really what it was like, or how much of this is the romanticized memory of Henry and Karen.
Yeah, which may as well be reality at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. So, interesting. So going back to the scene, my kind of observations is I feel bad for the people who had front row seats who now no longer, but they immediately welcome Henry and show their respect. You know?
Maybe they should have thought of that when they decided not to be in the mob.
Yeah, exactly. And then he sits down and the maitre d' points out that he gets a bottle of wine from Mr. Tony across the way.
Again, very fast. I mean, he couldn't have, even if he'd had time to... If he saw him coming down the aisle and he said, right. I need a bottle of champagne for them.
Right.
I mean, the waiter would have had to have been holding it.
And how is Mr. Matt?
Just give them that champagne right there that's on our table already. Just give them that one.
And how did Mr. Tony see them come in and say, oh, I want to buy them that? Like not only having the champagne on hand, but to have the other guest buy it for the, you know, like that transaction would have to occur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a lot of nonverbal stuff that you're at that point.
Yeah. Nods.
You know, and everybody knows what that means, which I don't know if happens in real life, but in the movies it always does, and that's good.
Yeah.
My thought was that it is unpleasant to sit that close to a horn section. Horns are very loud.
They are, it's true. Great. Yeah.
That does not make for a nice wonton soup.
So how you feeling tonight? What? I said, how are you feeling tonight?
That's why Henry Youngman was deaf. Henry goes over and shakes hands with all the guys.
Yep.
And there's one last guy that Henry doesn't look at or shake his hand, and he stares him down the entire time as they're sitting down.
Yep.
Yeah. He is awesome. That dude's awesome. He's just like, all right, buddy. You're not going to shake my hand. It's cool.
You're not a made guy. No, you can't be. You're half Irish.
Yeah.
Mick bastard. That's what he would have thought. And then as they sit down, Henry does his like, and he's just trying to play cool. Like, what? This isn't normal for you?
Yep. And the thing is, Karen is wide-eyed throughout all this. Like she's absolutely, and tomorrow we'll talk about her reaction to all this, but she is, it is clear that he is trying to be Mr. Big Shot and be Mr. Cool, but she is definitely impressed on some level. So.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, how could you not be?
Yeah.
I watch this and I wonder to myself, if Scorsese goes back and watches this, what does he see? Does he see mistakes? Mm. Things that we would never notice? Does Leota like look at it and does he remember? Oh, we had to do this so many times. Like I always wondered, like, because to me, it is perfect.
Yeah, I know. You know, watching it like this, which I have never done, I've never really watched this scene over and over outside the context of watching the entire movie. And you know, getting ready to do this show with you guys, watching the scene meticulously like this. You kind of hope for some fun mistakes to be able to point out. Like if you see in the back corner, you'll notice that there aren't any.
No, yeah, there aren't any. Stormtrooper crash his head, and you don't.
Yep. Yeah.
There's no boom. There's no, I was
looking for lights because I was watching where they were coming from. And while you can see there is lighting that would not be there, which we talked about a little bit, like there's no hint of it being a real thing. And it's much less obvious than even like there was a scene a little ways back where they're sitting in the car outside the, what's the place? The tiki bar.
Yeah, the bamboo lounge.
The bamboo lounge. Thank you. You know, and the light on them is like, that's clearly coming from somewhere inside the car that shouldn't be. But like, this is so, it's all so perfect. Like, yeah. it really appears completely flawless. And it really, when I watch it, I for some reason, I just assume they got it on the first try. I was like, it just looks like they just got it. And we're like, no, we're good. Let's go. Like, it feels like that, which is something.
It's like that. I don't know if you guys saw the first season of True Detective, that famous episode where they had the long tracking shot, which supposedly they got in two. You know, they did it twice, and they were done.
There was a second season? Sorry.
No, it was the first season. Don't you remember that big, long...
There was no second season.
Oh. Anyway, I agree with you. I like to think that they didn't do this over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's so amazing, too, is that it's one shot, but every element is beautiful. Like, it's beautifully lit. It's beautifully composed. Like, where we end up is this great shot that if you just saw that as a static cut-to shot, it would be amazing cinematography. Like, everything is composed perfectly. And when we land there, it's amazing.
And it makes you feel exactly like they're trying to make you feel.
Yep. Yeah. Like as wide-eyed as Karen is.
Yeah. And this is after we've seen it. Like, every time you watch it, it gets more impressive.
Yeah,
I think that's what's really great about it.
So speaking of wide-eyed, now's probably a good time to get to know Jeff a little more. So Jeff, do you remember the first time you saw Goodfellas?
You know, I wish I did. I wish I had a specific memory of it, but I know it wasn't in theaters because I was too young. But I suspect that it was in college because I went to college and got really into film and that was, I'm going to age myself here, but when I went to college, DVDs just started happening. And I remember my college roommate and friend got one of the first DVD players. And there was, in my college town, I went to UC Santa Barbara. And in Santa Barbara, there was a video rental store, guys. Remember those?
Ooh,
remember
yes,
video
I do.
Rental stores?
Yeah. I do. Yeah.
And they were one of the first in the area that did DVDs. And they had one shelf. That had every DVD that had come out to that point. And
I know
I'm not
going
kidding.
With this.
And it was like Terminator 2 was the first DVD. And then like every single week, a new series of DVDs would come out. But it would only be like three or four. And so we'd go in and we would just see every new DVD. And they started doing sort of just the best the movies that deserved that format
that
most.
Nerds would buy.
Exactly. And Goodfellas was one of the first, and I remember watching it in my dorm room. I don't know if that's the first time I saw it. It may have been, but I specifically remember watching it on DVD in my dorm room on a smallish television.
Do you remember
the standard 20-inch college TV?
Something like that. Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah. But it was in Letterbox, right? We saw it was the first time. Because it was DVD, right? So we were able to watch it like full widescreen as it's meant to be, and we were, you know, we were. I was an acting student. My friend who had the DVD player was a film studies major. Like, we were absorbing the great films that we had missed of our lives.
Yeah.
And I remember just being like, this is fucking amazing.
Well, now also, if I remember correctly, and maybe I don't know how much detail you remember about that memory, but I bought a DVD player in 1999, right after graduating college. I it was an old JVC one disc tray, and it was maybe about 4 inches high. Like, it was a super. And one of the first DVDs I bought was this movie, and it was a double sided DVD.
You had to flip it,
right?
You had to flip it. Yep,
yes.
like a laser disc. Yeah.
Yes.
And I was so mad at that because it interrupted the magic, you know.
Right.
So yeah. That's too funny.
Later on Gangs of New York, you had to switch the disc.
Oh, the worst.
They couldn't figure that out.
Yeah. Well, same thing with
Lord of the Rings, too. Oh, yeah, yeah. He said he dated himself with it, and I was just like, we had VHS.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I was, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you had the VHS version, it was pan and scan, right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure I saw pan and scan for the first time.
Yeah. Oh, man, pan and scan. I haven't heard that term in like 15 years.
Isn't it crazy that we grew up and it was people didn't want black bars on the top and bottom of their movies. Like, people actively didn't want that. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's nuts.
Crazy to me.
Yeah. Oh, I can't imagine any other way. Yeah.
So how would you classify your opinion and affection for this movie? Is it in your...
Oh, it's... Yeah. It's one of those for me. It's one of those that I've seen a dozen times or more. It's one of those that it never... doesn't seem like a good idea to watch Goodfellas. You know? Yeah, it's definitely in that pantheon of movies for me that I can always watch, have watched a bunch of times, and always yields new interesting insights, which is why it's so fun to step through it minute by minute, because I've certainly never done that before.
Well, yeah. Well, very few people have. I think very few people are.
Just, you know, like obsessive shut-ins.
Check, check.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like everybody we know is like that with this movie. And then I feel like maybe we're just being selective about the people we know.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, well, the best people.
Yeah,
clearly.
Yeah.
There was. No, sorry.
Well, you know, it's funny, too, because I'm doing the Slash Filmcast and we review movies. And even this year with Black Mass, you know, Black Mass came out.
Yeah.
Any kind of gangster film that's about a large period of time, you're going to compare to Goodfellas, and Goodfellas is going to win every time.
No one
has bested this movie. No one has bested it for the rise and fall story. It is still the best gangster rise and fall story ever made.
I totally agree. I mean, like we talked early on about how when you talk about the mafia movies, it's always kind of the Godfather and Goodfellas, and these movies couldn't be any more different.
Right.
And I feel as if the Godfather, unlike the Godfather, the Goodfellas has been imitated.
Yeah.
Right.
And no one has been able to, not even Marty has been able to recreate it.
I feel like the difference between them is that Goodfellas is a modern movie and Godfather is a classic movie. Like it's almost like the split between in cinema that happens is that Goodfellas still feels fresh. Like a lot of fast cutting, it moves around, you know, Godfather feels more like an older movie. And I don't even mean like a 70s movie, like a 40s movie. Like it's a classic style of movie as opposed to, you know, the frenetic thing that is Goodfellas that everybody's still trying to do and make faster and faster. But as you said, nobody's beat it. And that's a very good point. Marty hasn't beat it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, any other observations about Goodfellas, Jeff?
It's a wonderful piece of cinema. And it's one of those that it draws you in. It, you know, you look at these characters and you can be reviled by them. You can be put off by the things that they do, but you like them.
Yeah.
These minutes that I've been on the show for are evidence as to why. Like these are likable people who get in over their head, but I think that's a key to why this movie works, is that these characters are really great characters.
And you're rooting for them, even though they're vile, horrible people.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a classic tragedy, right? Yeah. It's going to end badly, and we know that, but we still are kind of hoping it won't.
Right. Well put. Excellent. Well, I think that about wraps up minute number 34. Appreciate it. So, Jeff, can you see us through the finish line here for tomorrow? Will you hang out?
Heck yeah.
All right. Let's do it. Excellent. So, tomorrow we'll be talking about minute number 35. Until then, you can go check us out on Twitter at GoodfellasMin and on Instagram and Facebook at GoodfellasMinute. And you can find all of our episodes at GoodfellasMinute.com. We also want to take a moment to thank everyone who supported the show by going to GoodfellasMinute.com/support or Patreon.com/GFM. You all are awesome and keep the podcast running. Jeff is also we have concerns is Patreon supported, right? You know,
indeed,
so,
it is. Yeah.
So that wonderful community, and I believe several of our patrons are actually We Have Concerns patrons as well too.
Awesome.
So
good people
indeed. So if you have any questions or concerns or if you need help, email us at contact@goodfellowsminute.com.
You're like a vocabulary sponge.
Shut in and you need help.
Yeah, exactly. And if you like comic books, be sure to check out our sister site ifanboy.com for our weekly podcast over there. So until tomorrow, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
I'm Jeff.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up to you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending,
which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.